Hello and welcome to episode 510 of Fergo on the Freak. I'm the bloke from Rugby League Project, Andrew Ferguson. You can find me on Twitter at AndrewRLP or perhaps even in this tin can. And joining me today is the glorious League Freak. You can also find in this tin can on Twitter at League Freak. How you going there, mate?
I'm going very well, Andrew. We should let everyone know that your computer was not playing nice tonight. So you're basically on a portable communication device that you carry around daily. For some reason, yes. It sounds like you're in a tin can. I don't know why it wouldn't sound better, hey?
Well, my recording booth is just a corrugated shed.
Yes.
Corrugated iron shed. That's all I've got. And I've decided to shut the door.
Excellent. So
it's a bit tinny.
It works. It works. So how good was Las Vegas?
I don't know. I'll tell you what, my first concern through all of this, because I was watching a lot of the build-up and the lead-up to it all, and the first thing that came to my mind through all of this is, how much does all of this advertising cost?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they had this stuff on walls on every major advertising thing over there, and it was all, like, very impressive and looked grand and everything, but I thought, that shit's not going to be cheap.
Yeah, they did it. I mean, look, they did it right, which is, I saw a figure of $20 million all up for the whole thing, which is, it's a whack. Like, that's a whack. Mm. The TV viewing figures in Australia were record figures for many, many years for a regular season sporting match of any kind. So it worked well in Australia, but it only got 60,000 viewers on Fox Sports 1 over in the US. Which is probably going to be disappointing figures, but look at 60,000 that, you know, they probably don't normally get. But yeah, for $20 million, I think overall it was like, it was all right. Like everyone's either saying that this thing is it's either the greatest thing ever and the entire world's about to embrace rugby league, or it's the biggest colossal failure ever. And I tend to be right smack bang in the middle where, like, it worked out all right. We had an event. It had a good crowd. The games were good. You know, it got a small viewing figure over there. It got a big one over here. It just seems to have worked out okay. But I guess the proof will be in a few years' time when we've played this game a few times over there. And if there's more of a demand for it or no more demand for it or less of a demand for it. And that's really where we're going to find out.
Yeah. I think the only way to make it work is, and as I said, like I didn't get a chance to watch it, but I think the only way to make it work would be if the American teams were more heavily involved in what the NRL is doing. So you can say, you know, the NRL is paying for this big grand extravaganza. Mm-hmm. But guess what, America? You've actually got some teams here you can go and watch play this mag game as well. And yep. Here they are. And, you know, here's a sample. You know, even if they're playing, you know, sevens games or something like that for the 2 hours prior to the NRL kicking off or something. Just, I don't know, anything. Just to let them know that America has these teams as well. It's not just some weird fucking crazy shit that's turned up from Australia.
Yeah. Well, look,
in America, you know.
I know they had an international between the US and Canada, and it was a high school stadium maybe, and they had they had Masters rugby league and stuff. I was actually DMing with one of the people that helps run Masters rugby league for Canada, and talking to him about it and his experience with it all, and he said they, like over there in the US, they kind of used this NRL game as a rallying point for everyone to try and get together and meet and set up some things and really network with one another. And then the added bonus was going to the NRL game as well. And so, like, he tended to think it all worked out pretty well. The only things that I've seen that have been any sort of complaints from people were, and Nicholas said this to me before the match, there was really strong winds, at the stadium, and so they had to cancel like tailgating and stuff like that. And I think that that will be something that people really enjoy if they get a chance to do that next year. And apparently the audio within the stadium was absolutely terrible for whatever reason. And that was
it was like going to Wynn Stadium then?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, pretty much. And but look, apart from that, the games were good. I think the smaller sized field that they used wasn't so small that it was really distracting or anything. It seemed fine. As you and me talked about last week, I mean, there's probably smaller fields that they play on in England over there. So that wasn't a problem. And, yeah, the teams put on a pretty good show. And, you know, it all turned out all right. Like, we could have switched on and there was 10,000 people there and the games were crap. And it wasn't like that. So, you know, it was a good start. And as I said, we'll see what happens next year. But it was interesting to see that a lot of the media people that obviously got a pass to go over there, and they started.
I think the term is junket.
Yeah, it is junket. It's definitely junket. There were the ones that it was funny, about a week before the game, there was this fake story that they put together where they said that a bunch of media types were accosted by thugs with knives in LA, and nobody cared. No one gave a fuck. So they dropped that story. they just obviously they'll try and make it about themselves, and they say it's a great this, great that, and then Spencer Lenu calls somebody, you know, on the field a monkey, and of course they just all switch, and now it's all about that, and you know, it tarnished the entire event. It's like, come on now, like, let's not go that far. Spencer Lenu is going to be dealt with. And, you know, that'll be that. But, yeah, it was really weird to see all these media types getting their fucking, you know, their snouts in the trough.
Although the funny part was I saw a screenshot from NRL 360.
Mm-hmm.
And there was the advertising that was going on in the background
when
Buzz was on screen for the strippers, whatever it was.
But I think it was for escorts, hey?
That's the one it was too.
Yeah, you know what would be the most podcast thing to do right now?
Mm-hmm.
Would be to find that photo and call them.
Pretty sure it's in your replies, is it not?
Let me see. I don't know if you can see the phone number for it. Hang on. Let me see.
Oh, okay.
Is it in my DMs, do you mean?
I sent it to you though as well. Yeah, Sean replied to your tweet, and I replied with a picture of Buzz.
Oh, dude, I get. Oh, here's a. Yeah, I see.
Oh, I thought you can almost get it.
It's the first numbers. Damn. It must have gone past. Like, we've got to be able to get the rest of the numbers.
Yeah, we'll just have to. I'll have to get onto my Fox Sports and rewatch the episode.
Yeah, that's a shame. Could have rang up and
Hello, I'm 17. I've been down in a lot of vodka. Any chance you can come around and give me a lap dance?
We could have got some prices for things and all sorts. It would have been good. But yeah, like overall, I thought the event was all right. I was happy with the crowd. The crowd was really good, and that's the main thing. And they were really into the games as well. And
you know who the big winner was?
Was it rugby league?
No, it was Paul Kent.
Why?
Mate, first appearance back on NRL 360, and he gets to go over to LA.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess. Well, it was in Las Vegas, so.
Well, it's all the same thing, really.
Yeah, it's all.
LV.
Yeah. But yeah. I can't watch. I can't watch any of the shows at all anymore. Oh, no. It's just
You can't. They're horrid.
Yeah.
It's like watching it's like watching Question Time, but with less maturity.
But the exact,
it's got the same and it has the exact same amount of rugby league analysis going on as Question Time as well,
and the exact same percentage of cunts.
Percentage wise, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's. I hate the fact they took that over there.
Mm-hmm.
There's no need for that. That was pointless.
Yep.
It's just, man. I want to get into the Spencer Linnea stuff very, very briefly.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to go into the incident itself. Everyone knows what's going on there. And if you don't, I don't want to repeat it. But I think the NRL is in a position now where there's been a few too many of these incidents of racism and you know, things said on the field and stuff of that racist nature. I think the NRL needs to go, you know what? We've decided right now, as of now, that we're going to stamp down hard on this shit and we're going to find the player, we're going to find the club, and we're going to suspend the player for several weeks. And if this is not going to get the message through, then the next person who does it, they're going to get even worse.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to keep getting, making it worse and worse and worse until you get the message. Because I think if they go through and they be light on this, then they're just condoning that behavior. And they need to start stamping this shit out because it's getting ridiculous.
Well, the interesting thing about this situation is that unlike in the past where we've seen where it's, for whatever reason, it's come out a little bit cloudy about what was said and was it directly said to someone and stuff like that. This seems very direct, very pointed at Ezra Mann. And everyone...
The player himself, Spencer Lenu, hasn't even... He's basically doubled down on it more than anything.
Well, I've definitely seen people around him... posting on social media about it, which I think is crazy. Like, if I was one of these footy players, I would have to tell everybody around me, like, do not post about football. Do not post about anything I'm involved in because it just makes a problem for them. It makes a problem mm-hmm. for the player, you know? And then they've got to deal with that. And I just can't believe that that happens still. But, yeah, this seems really directed. And Mam obviously... Yeah, I mean, it definitely offended him. It wasn't just something that was said to him. It really offended him. And it offended his teammates on his behalf as well to the point where something happened. There was some sort of confrontation at the team's hotels as well. So I think that that's probably the difference between this situation and some other situations we've seen in the past. And it's going to be interesting to see what they suspend Spencer for, and if they fine him as well, because I don't know the correct numbers on that. I've got no idea. Like, where do you start with that sort of stuff? Maybe they've got guidelines in their rules and stuff that do cover racism on the field, but we'll wait and see. But I think if you come out of it with like a 1 week ban or something, it'd be pretty outrageous. You know, it's got to be longer than that.
Yeah, they've got to start doing something. It's because it's, as I said, it doesn't have to be many times for it to be too many. Like two or three times is too many.
Mm.
And it's, I think it's been more than that. They need to start getting really serious on it and really stamp that shit out because it's just, it does nothing for anyone. And there's no need for it on the field.
No.
I don't get that stuff.
Yeah, like... I understand, like, mouthing off at one another and things like that, but I just, when I heard about it, I was like, fucking hell, you know, it's kind of crazy. So, yeah, hopefully they give him enough of a ban where everyone else sort of takes notice of it and just stops doing it. It's just, you know, we don't need it in footy.
Nah, never have. Now... There was something I was going to mention before. I don't know if I did it before during the World Club Challenge one or not.
Mm-hmm.
I think I forgot to raise it. Mm-hmm. But there was the issues with the rules that the referee was getting wrong. And it just made me realize that we've got to stop having different sets of rules for different formats of the game.
Yeah.
That's different to the NRL rules and different to the Super League rules. It's rugby league. Why can't we get this shit like more condensed and refined so that poor referees in the middle don't get themselves confused between what is an actual rule in one game but not in another?
Yeah, because, I mean, there was a point in that World Club Challenge match where the Panthers wanted to challenged one of the calls on the field, and the referee said they couldn't, but apparently under international rules you can.
Yes, and there was another one with the one-on-one strip where the second tackler, the Panthers defender, second defender fell off,
mm-hmm.
and the Panther player performed the strip, which is legal under international rules, and the referee penalised them, saying, no, it was a two-man tackle. That was another one as well, and that was later in the game and in the Wigan half. So it probably did change momentum a little bit.
That and the fact that Wigan just had to get within 10 metres of the line and look at it, and that was a try. But
that's local rules.
Yeah, they're the Super League rules. close enough try. But it all comes from the fact that the NRL changes the rules as they see they need to in the NRL, and I understand the need to do that, because the NRL is the pinnacle of the sport and everyone's trying to gain advantages wherever they can. And sometimes you've got to be, quick on your feet if you're the rule makers, and you do have to change rules. But I think the problem is that obviously over in Super League, they play by a set of rules which they're changing very rapidly, especially next year. It's not even going to be rugby league. And then the International Rugby League has the international set of rules, and they tend to follow what the NRL's done, but who cares what the International Rugby League does? Who gives a fuck? No one listens to them. So we do. We've got all of these different rule sets. And if somebody said, what are the true rules of rugby league, you would probably point towards the NRL rules, because eventually that's what we get anyway.
In the modern game, absolutely. I just think it's the people who suffer the most out of it are the actual referees.
Yeah.
Because most of the referees in the NRL and Super League have to also officiate international games.
Yep.
So they've got to basically go have a bit of a crash course and always constantly keep in the back of the head, I can't call that up, or I have to call that up, and where I otherwise wouldn't. And that can't be easy to do for one match. Unless they just go, we're just going to have some standalone referees who are just going to be international referees to deal with these things. But, I mean, how many games are they going to get to officiate in a year?
Exactly. The other thing is, too, I've always thought that we should have three sets of rules for rugby league, which were really easy to follow. We have the professional set, which is what the NRL, Super League and internationals are played by. And then we have, below that, which would be amateur rugby league rules, which would really be what we consider to be the international rules now. Where they don't change as fast. Maybe they change every 3 years if need be, or they get updated every 3 years, or maybe even every World Cup cycle if need be. And then below that, you have your junior sets of rules, which are a little bit different because there's all sorts of different ways that they want to have those rules to get kids playing footy and then look after them, But I think that having a professional set and then a normal general set of rugby league rules would be the best way to go, because then the professional rules can change as they need to very quickly. But you've still got your basis level of these are the rules of rugby league. And, that would allow you to not have to worry about video referees and things like that. It's anybody that plays rugby league can abide by those rules.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I've thought about it for a long time.
Very, very well thought out. You should try being a journalist.
No, the problem is I've got a soul.
That is a problem.
Yeah, so I'd never be a journalist or a redhead.
Hey, if you're a redheaded journalist, does that mean they cancel each other out?
No, it doesn't. Just doubles down. It's like you've
Sorry, Danny.
You get negative soul.
Sorry, Danny, I tried to help you out. The first and last time, mate. All right. What else? I was going to say, what else has been going on?
Well, look, after this Las Vegas game and when it was still all had just happened and everyone was still excited about it and they hadn't realised that Spencer Lenu had destroyed the entire thing and that only 60,000 people had watched it on Fox Sports in the US, people started talking about expansion. And Peter Volandis is talking about he wants to get to a 20-team competition by the time he's done as the ARLC chairman. And so that means we've got to end up with three more teams. He talked about having a second team in New Zealand. He talked about Perth a little bit.
Okay.
But then
I was going to say, those two seem like the obvious and sensible choices that have to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, they seem pretty straightforward, don't they?
Yeah.
But then people were talking about having a team in maybe even Las Vegas or LA. I guess, look, it would be possible, but it's 15-hour flight time. If it's 15 hours if you fly from – and I'm going from Sydney only, okay? Yeah. So if you go from Sydney to LA, it's 15 hours. If you go from Sydney to Las Vegas, it's a bit more than 15 hours, but not too much. If you go from Sydney to Dallas, it is also 15 hours because it's a direct flight. They do direct flights from Sydney to Dallas. I think the only way you could really bring in US teams is if you get to 20 teams and then you wait a little bit and then you bring in four teams all together that are based in the US so that you can get almost a conveyor belt of teams going over from Australia, and they do the course of the teams in the US and then they fly back. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the only way you can do it.
Yeah.
So you've got to have, say, like three teams that all go over together. And when they go over there, they play all the teams that are in the US all at the same time.
Mm.
And then those three teams come back, preferably with the American teams. And those American teams play a bunch of games here. Then they go back with three or four more NRL teams. And then you just keep going backwards and forwards like that. You want to try and have also as little travel as possible for the American teams, which is going to be hard to do. The only way you can get around that is by having them come over here for the first 6 months of the year, or, you know, first half of the season, so to speak. Kind of like what Toronto did. Yeah. So they come over here and they base themselves in Australia and they play all their away games here. And then they go back home, and then teams go over in groups of three or four, and they play all the teams over there. And the other way you're going to make that work is, I think, in order to get the clubs to come on board with that, is the NRL has to pay for all the flights.
Yeah, yeah. It'd all have to be covered by basically the TV deal, you know, and that would be dependent on if they can get enough of a supporter base in the US that is going to watch these games. Because really, relative to the US market, setting up an NRL team is pretty cheap. And we've got the money to do it now in the NRL. Like, the money's there. But you don't just want to piss the money away before you've built anything. You want to make sure that there's actually a market there. But, yeah, they'd be the three destinations. You could do San Francisco as well, but the cost of living in San Francisco is astronomical, so I don't think it'd work. There just wouldn't be the right incentive there for players to be based in San Francisco, be on an NRL player's salary, and like so much of it would just go on, you know, wherever you were staying. It would be outrageous.
Would it be worthwhile getting the Wolfpack back?
But, well, the flight...
I know it's a hike to get to Canada, but...
You'd be better off having the London Broncos in the NRL. It'd be longer to get to Toronto than it is to get to London. So I think that's probably out of the realms of possibility, unfortunately, crazy.
Well, we all know what the best option is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we went through this on episode one.
Mm-hmm.
Numero uno. The best option is Hawaii.
Yeah. That is 10 hours. You could have a team in Hawaii. You could have a team in LA. You could have a team in Dallas and a team in Las Vegas. And that's 10 hours and up to 15, 16 hours to get to all those places, direct flights. You could do it, but it's a big investment. You'd have to, and it's the away games, as you said, that you'd have to work out. And I think you're right. I think you you start off the season with them all in Australia, even if they play three or four games in Australia and then head back home, and then you deal with it after that, you know. But look, it's possible, but and I think players would be keen to go over there and play over there, but it's definitely a down the track thing. I don't think we're about to see a US based team. And like I say, the easiest US based team would be Hawaii. And you could say that's the Pacific team. It covers the entire Pacific. You know, you're just slightly tapping into the US market. It's only a 10-hour flight time. There's a lot of plus sides to that. And plus, if you're a rugby league player, like, who doesn't want to live in Hawaii for the whole season? That'd be amazing. The only problem they'd have is a stadium. The only stadium that I think would be suitable would be Aloha Stadium. It might not be even called that anymore, but it's the stadium they used to play the Pro Bowl at. The problem is that stadium's pretty decrepit, and I think that they're actually wanting to get rid of it, but there's not the financial incentive to get rid of it. So that's the only downside, is the facilities.
Yeah. We better address the elephant in the room. And that is the Papua New Guinea Albanese's.
Yeah.
Well, look, there's been a lot of money pumped into that already, and it's not even an official bid yet.
Yeah. And the thing is, they're having so many issues in PNG right now with violence and stuff like that. I think that's probably off the table at the moment, hey?
It's... I don't know if the NRL would be or should be diving into this whole political shitstorm. If I was them, and it's got nothing to do with whichever political party it is, they should be steering clear of that drama. Just go, you know what, hey, guys, thanks for the offer, but can we not have a political party involved? Because the first thing will happen is whichever political party is behind it, so at the moment it's the Labor Party, they will say, oh, you know, we're the party for rugby league and blah, 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 and that's what will happen. You'll get this, you get the political attachment to the game and all this sort of stuff, and it starts becoming more closely linked and fucking irritating.
And at the end of the day, it screws over the game when it's linked closely to one party or the other, because you know, they lose power and then the other party comes in and says, well, screw rugby league, and they cut all the funding to everything, and then the other mob comes in, and so you've never got stability. And I think rugby league is in a pretty good place in Australia in that it hasn't got a political affiliation really. So it needs to steer clear of that sort of reliance on one political party over the other, which I agree with completely. Because, I mean, they're all lying scumbags, a whole lot of them from all parties. So did you see after those NRL games in Las Vegas, I think it was the Minister for Sport said that he saw the games and it inspired him to try and push for a roof on the Olympic Stadium in Sydney? And it's like, has this guy never fucking seen a stadium with a roof before? Is he serious? And then, like, I started tweeting, like, How about he goes over to Penrith, looks at what he's going to spend $300 million on and finishes the fucking project. Maybe has a whole stadium in Penrith. That'd be cool.
Hey, maybe to finish the stadium there, you put a roof on it.
Yeah. Hey, it'd be good. Solved. It'd be good to have more than two stands. That'd be great.
Well, you know, if you throw in, say, like $2 or $3 billion there, you might be able to get an extra stand and a roof.
Yeah, that'd be good. That'd be good. You always know that you're getting a shitty stadium when they start talking about the upgraded toilets.
Well, I mean, I can't talk. We haven't had upgraded toilets like that yet.
Yeah.
And all they do is paint them. Well, they're getting a bit yellow again. Let's paint them orange.
Oh, jeez.
The eighth wonder.
Yeah.
It's a wonder. All right. I was looking at some stats from the games played on the weekend.
Yeah.
Most noticeably for one particular player. You might guess who.
Was it James Tedesco?
No, it wasn't James Tedesco. But you're on the right track. It was a former Tiger.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Yes. I know who it was.
I thought I'd check out. See how Brooks went. Because obviously I haven't seen the game. I wanted to see his numbers. And obviously wanted to see how much the Manly fans had already put into some sort of Kickstarter account to build a statue for him.
Mm-hmm.
Which I believe is up to about $2.4 million for anyway.
Oh, nice.
Because he scored a try, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that would have been where the first million came in. But his stats weren't horrible. And this is the thing, though. And it proves why you can't just rely solely on stats, because for a lot of his time with the West Tigers, his stats were pretty solid.
Yeah.
So I might have a look here. We're comparing him with DCE. Okay, so both of them had 19 runs. Brooks, 97 metres. DCE, 125. Brooks had one line break to nil, one line break assist to nil. Cherry Evans had one try assist to nil. They both had two tackle breaks. DCE had five dummy half runs. Brooks doesn't know how to do that. But yeah, they got the ball a similar sort of amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, DC got a lot more ball because, you know, he's the halfback, so that's going to happen. Brooks, 24 tackles and only two missed and none ineffective.
Mm-hmm.
DC, 18 tackles, one missed, no ineffective. So defensively, both pretty solid. I mean, they're not going to go out there and do much one-on-one tackling, but they're not being pushed off.
Mm-hmm.
That was never something that Brooks was too much of an issue with. He wasn't getting bumped off. He had a habit of sticking, but because there's so little of him, it didn't really matter if he stuck to the tackle or not.
At some stage, it just becomes physics.
That's right. The one thing that they're both pretty close stats-wise the whole way through. The one thing, though, that did surprise me was the fact that Brooks only had three kicks.
Mm-hmm.
And only for 60 metres, so they were short kicks.
Mm-hmm.
They had one bomb and two grubbers. I thought that was interesting because I would have thought that the idea of having Brooks there was having a general field kicker just randomly. You don't have to go to him when DC's under pressure. Just go to him every now and then to make the defence think, shit, we don't know which one's going to kick. We're going to have to try and put pressure on both, which is going to open up opportunities on both sides of the field. But instead, Seabolt's just decided, no, DC, you just do everything. And it seemed rather pointless in that aspect. But other than that, all the stats are very evenly matched, which I kind of sort of expected. I actually thought the kick one would be a lot closer and the amount of touches for each would be a little bit closer. There was a bit of a spread there, but I think Brooks held his own.
Mm.
I don't think you're going to get too many matches throughout the year, though, where he's going to be that close statistically with DCE.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't look at what he's got there and just hate that he had a poor game.
No, look, and they won the game, and that's the important thing. And like, we'll see how they go as the season goes on, because he really should get better as he's around in this different team, you know, and he gets that combination with DCE going a little bit better. The only thing that I would temper it with is that because they were playing on a bit of a narrow field, I think it was about 7 metres more narrow than a regulation NRL field. We'll see what happens with defensively and all that when they're able to spread them out a little bit more. Opposition teams can spread them out a little bit more and that. And, yeah, I mean, you know what I think about Brooks. I'm so completely out on Brooks. So,
yes.
But look,
as I've said before, I've always believed that he's always had the skill set, but the one skill, the most important one he's never had was communication.
Yeah.
And by being 5'8" with probably one of the best talkers, if not the best talker as a halfback in the game in DCE, you've immediately eliminated his weakness. So you've only got his general strengths left, mm-hmm. which should mean that he's going to play some of his best football now. How good that will be, we're not too sure.
Yeah.
We'll as I said in the preview, though, I think that the way that Tom Trbojevic plays does suit the way Luke Brooks plays because, mm-hmm. as I said, it mirrored Brooks and Tedesco when they were playing together. And having a chatty halfback, kind of similar to when he was playing alongside Moses, which was, you know, what he did in his juniors when he was, you know, playing good football and got the attention of everybody. So to me, everything is in place. So if it doesn't work out, then there's only one person to blame, and that's Luke Brooks.
Yeah.
Or probably Anthony Seibold as well. But, you know, it's and if it doesn't work out, if he doesn't have possibly close to, if not his best season, his second best season this year, then I will join you on being out on the Luke Brooks thing. I've been giving him quite a quite a few long leash. No,
I know what you mean. I'm just trying to think of like what's the longest you've ever had faith in a player before you realize like, oh man.
I reckon I probably went close to 20 games thinking that Dean Hallitau. He was okay for what he was, a utility player. Now I must have gone nearly 20 games thinking that David Nofaluma was an NRL quality winger.
I remember I stuck by Brett Furman for longer than I should have.
I remember you telling me about that once.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, really? Why him?
Yeah, look, he had some good games in his first few games, and I was like, oh, man, I see some stuff here, and he just never did it again. It's kind of strange.
Is that why you're out on Brooks, because he reminds you of Furman?
Oh, no, I would take Furman over Brooks right now. Brett Furman's probably about 40.
Do him easy.
Yeah.
Did
you hear the news that come out, and it come out really conveniently while the NRL was celebrating their time in Las Vegas, that Super League next year is going to make the Catalan Dragons pay for everybody's flights over to play them.
I didn't hear that, but I'm surprised it's taken this long before Super League finally made that announcement, because I've been waiting for them to do that for years.
Mm. Isn't it insane?
It's ridiculous.
Mm.
You've finally got a team in France that's competitive with the Super League sides, and you've effectively just gone and decided, let's see if we can kill them.
Yeah. Apparently Toulouse have to do the same thing in the National League. Hey, they already have to do that. And, like, there's only one reason you start doing stuff like that to teams is to get rid of them.
Yes, we had it here with the Western Reds.
Yeah, yeah. Just so silly, so short-sighted.
And the worst part about it too is obviously the Super League gets to dictate how the draw plays out.
Yeah.
So you know what they'll do with the first week? Oh, Catalans, they can play at home round one, and then they can go to Huddersfield, and then they'll be at home, and then they can go to Wigan, and then they'll be at home, then they'll go to Leeds, and they'll be at home, then they go to Hull, and they'll be at home.
Yeah.
Just fly, backwards and forwards all the time. Let's rack up that bill. Don't let them stay here for a little bit. So, I don't know. I think if I was Catalan, I'd probably say, we're not going to pay for anyone's flights, and if they don't come, then that's a forfeit for them.
Ooh,
what are you going to do?
Yeah, that'd be really interesting.
I'm sure that they can find some ground to stand on there. Like, are they going to say, are the other Super League clubs going to pay for us to fly to their home ground?
Well, that's the thing. Like, if that's how it worked out, you could understand it to a certain point, because the money would just cancel itself out by the end of the year.
Hmm.
But, like, otherwise it just seems like they want rid of the Catalan Dragons, and I can't imagine why, because it has been one of the very few successes since Super League kicked off over there in the mid-90s. Really, it's the only one that you can say, well, at least they've got the Catalan Dragons and they're trying to get rid of them. It's absolutely crazy. And look, the next step from that is they do the same thing to the London Broncos. And then we just go back to playing the same teams that have been in the same fucking league since 1895.
And back in the good old days.
Yeah. Oh, back when we had the Yorkshire and Lancashire Cup. Remember the good old days before fucking electricity and running water.
You know what's crazy about they had the Yorkshire and Lancashire Cup, right? But they also had this ranked concurrently with the actual main competition, a Yorkshire and Lancashire League.
Yeah.
But for many years, they had more Yorkshire teams than Lancashire teams. So every now and then, they had to get a Yorkshire team to join Lancashire.
Oh, God.
So it meant that for a few seasons, they had Huddersfield in the Lancashire division. They had Hull in the Lancashire division. good times. Bring back those good old days.
It makes you wonder if they should just take all of this travel stuff to the extreme and everyone starts paying for everyone else's coaches and then the coach drivers and then any tollways they've got to go through, maybe lunch halfway through, you know, maybe when you get
take the train, the Eurostar, wherever it is.
But make them take the train?
Yeah, absolutely. Like take all the trains they need to get from, you know, from Leeds all the way down there and then go on that train that goes from England to France.
Yeah, through the channel.
Yeah, it'd be like one of those Top Gear specials where they can only use public transport. Yeah. And when they get to the ground, they have to issue all of their receipts for all their ticket prices and then do it all coming back.
Oh, shit. That's so funny.
And you have to leave. Like, they'll go through and say, right, kickoff is at 3 o'clock. So we need you here right on 3 o'clock. And if you turn up late, then we're going to kick off and we're just going to start scoring tries until you get to the field.
Yeah. I remember a grand final like that.
Good times. Back in the good old days.
They were the good old days too, yeah.
The good old days, yeah. Great times. We should go back to those.
Well, everyone wants to go back to the good old days.
Yeah. Well, did you know that game you're talking about?
Yeah.
Just for those who don't know what we're talking about, the 1909 final in the New South Wales Rugby League, that was actually the first game that Phil Rothfield ever covered.
Oh, really?
I had to get an ageist joke in there. There we go.
Yeah.
A bit of comedy for the listeners.
It is.
I'm here all night.
It is weird when you see, like, the journalists now, in the print media especially, they're all old as fuck.
Yeah, they're crazy. I mean, some of them are getting to be twice my age. And I mean, as we discovered in my last birthday, I'm 49 apparently now. So, you know, bus is 98.
Oh, shit.
Oh, man.
I can't believe how short-sighted the Super League administrators are. And I wonder if that's the sort of thing IMG has the ability to step in and say, hang on a second, are you people stupid? Because that's really what they need to be able to do if they're going to effectively promote rugby league, because they've got an outlet in an entire another country. And, you know, the Super League administrators obviously don't want that. It's a shame that the flight times to get from, like, the Catalan Dragons to Australia would just be too long, because they'd have to have too many connecting flights and stuff like that. Otherwise, we could have invited them into our comp.
Yeah, it'd be good to find a way to get one English team, as a minimum, one English team, one French team, and one American team somehow involved in the NRL.
Mm.
In a way where we can take games over there as well.
Yeah.
You know, to those countries. But it's logistically just impossible. But I mean, the other way around it is, yeah, you have some sort of like a worldwide competition where everyone's involved and you play it in those nations that aren't England or Australia. But we don't have any of those.
Well, the way you could do it is if you, instead of playing, and I've talked about this a fair bit, but instead of playing every weekend, you're basically playing every week and a half, so, and that mitigates the travel that you've got to do. And then you end up playing like a schedulist, like, say, the NBA has, where you have games every day of the week. But you've got enough – you would have to have enough teams to make that work, because I still think there'd be the appetite to have games on the weekend for people to watch. But that's really the only way I could see it ever working. And maybe you have a – say a 22 round competition, but you instead of have or 22 week competition where you play 22 games, but you spread that out instead of over 22 weeks, you may be doing it over 30 weeks or whatever. So that's the only way I can see doing it, something like that.
Or we go fucking crazy. Mm-hmm. We bring these teams to Australia. They play all their away games here.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get every single NRL player onto planes and we fly them over to America for those bunch of games. And then we pick them up and we fly them over to England for those bunch of games and France. And then we come all back home. You go on a worldwide junket and we leave all the journos at home.
That would be the biggest footy tour ever.
Wouldn't that be insane? Think of the shenanigans that were going on the plane and with no journos.
Oh,
the players would sign up for it in an instant.
Can you imagine all of these places that the players went to in 20 years from now, how good their rugby league players would be?
Absolutely.
Just so many local fucking rendezvous and what's fucking Tinder would be getting hammered. Just get Tinder to sponsor it, hey?
Actually, that's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. They can get all that money they get from Russian bots on there. Oh, yeah. Man, the money. It'd just be pouring and it'd be fantastic. That's the way to make some money.
Something would be pouring.
Oh, yeah. It'd be moist. Now, look, the teams for this weekend for the rest of the NRL round have been named.
Yes.
I do have some stats.
Okay.
Where are they? Let me find the stats that I had. They're around here somewhere. Give me a sec. This is great radio.
Okay. So let me take you through the two games we've had so far in round one. We've had the Seagulls beat the Rabbitohs 36 points to 24. And we had the Roosters beat the Broncos 20 points to 10. So the other games we have on are the Knights versus Raiders. Who did I pick in that one? I think I picked the Knights in that one. We got the New Zealand Warriors versus the Sharks. I picked the Warriors in that one. We got the Panthers versus Storm. I can't remember the last time the Storm lost a game in the first round. I think they've still got this ridiculous winning streak. So we'll see if they can keep that up against the Panthers. I picked the Panthers.
Let me have a look. Actually, I should just stop you there. I'll have a quick look on that one.
Okay.
I should go through those stats while you're going through and doing your tips.
Because
mm-hmm. I've got a few there. Some of them are a bit samey, but there's a few good ones there. But let's check out the Storm in round one. A few clicky clicks here. The last round one loss
mm-hmm.
was 2001.
That's insane.
They've won 21 straight round one games.
it's incredible.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And if they can do it against the Panthers, it just keeps an incredible record going. And like that, you can't say they shirked anyone if they beat the Panthers in round one.
They've only played Penrith once in round one, and that was in 1999, and they won 32-10.
There you go.
So for the Knights Raiders.
Yes.
Canberra played at McDonald Jones Stadium. I think back then it was called the Newcastle International Sports Centre. They played there before the Newcastle Knights did. And that was when Canberra beat St George 20-10 in round 12, 1985, which was the first premiership game at that venue and the first premiership game played in Newcastle since the original Newcastle side competed in 1909.
Wow, that's cool. I didn't know that.
So it's basically Canberra's home ground.
If they get six more, they've got as many as the Tigers.
Yeah, and the rest. Newcastle have had 16 wins and a draw in their 25 games against the Raiders in Newcastle.
Mm-hmm.
And 42 of the 57 games between those two sides have seen a combined total of at least 40 points scored in the game.
Okay.
Lots of points. Warriors Sharks. The Sharks have won 15 of the last 21 games against the Warriors. The Warriors have won 14 of the last 21 games played in New Zealand. And the Sharks have won 9 of their last 14 games played outside of Sydney. Bit of something for everyone there.
Yeah, that's like, that just, if you were going to go by the stats, you'd just be super confused. It's probably going to be a draw.
Penrith and the Storm is probably going to do more. Penrith have recorded just 4 victories from 20 trips to Melbourne, 2 of which have come in their last 2 games.
Okay, wow.
Penrith have won 8 of their last 12 games against Melbourne and 5 of their last 6. Penrith have won 25 of their last 29 games outside of New South Wales, and Melbourne have won 23 of their last 29 games played in Victoria, winning by an average score of 31-14.
What was that stat, Penrith outside of New South Wales?
25 of 29.
That's insane.
Yeah, it really is. Eels versus Bulldogs.
Mm-hmm.
Parramatta have won 13 of their last 16 games against the Dogs. This is the one that I like the most, though.
Mm-hmm.
The Bulldogs' last 10 games has seen them concede an average of 41 points per game. In 1935, possibly one of the worst seasons by any club of all time, the Bulldogs conceded 41.25 points per game, only a quarter of a point per game more. West in 1999 conceded just 39.33 points per game.
Holy crap, that's terrible.
That's where the Bulldogs were at the end of last year.
Wow.
and the Eels have won 39 of their 54 games played at Combank ANZ Bank of New Zealand or Queensland New South Wales Stadium. Trying to get all the banks in there.
Yeah, yeah.
So you got Parramatta in that one?
Yeah, I got Parramatta. Like, how can you not, you know?
Yeah.
The Parramatta Eels are a football club and the Bulldogs are Phil Gould's fancy rugby league team.
I'm not in a footy tipping cop this year because I forgot to do it.
Yeah, I set one up.
Yes, I know you did.
Yeah, and I just forgot to promote it. I've had other things happening, so I forgot to promote it.
That's all right. For Knights Raiders, I'll probably pick the Knights. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Sharks, I'm going to lean towards the Sharks.
Mm-hmm.
Only because I think they've had such little changes to their roster, it might be enough to get them over the line.
Mm-hmm.
But that's only going to work for a few games at the start of the season where everyone's up to speed, so that might be their only chance there. Storm Panthers. I'm going to go Melbourne.
Okay.
Eels Bulldogs. Eels probably by a lot. Next one is Titans Dragons. The Dragons have had 1 win from their last 6 visits to the Gold Coast, and that was in 2019.
Well, the Titans are known for their consistency.
Mm. The Titans have won 4 of their last 6 games against the Dragons. And the Dragons have won just 4 of their last 23 games.
Wow, holy shit.
Yeah. I'll go Titans there. It's either going to be a low-scoring ball fest or it'll be a high-scoring ball fest.
Yeah, the Titans are really the only team that could put on a game where it's boring and they've scored 38 points or something like that. But, yeah, I agree. Yeah. Pick the Titans.
And last one, I've got Dolphins-Cowboys. The Cowboys have won 4 of their last 5 games at Suncorp. This will be the Cowboys' 99th premiership game against the Queensland-based side. Oh. And the Dolphins have won just 2 of their last 12 games, conceding 29.67 points per game.
I had to go the Cowboys in this one.
Yeah, I will too. I think the Cowboys are probably going to be a strong side again this year.
Can the West Tigers get the 2 against the bye?
You know what's going to be great?
Mm.
Is at the end of this week, do you know what position the West Tigers are going to be?
they're going to be ninth.
They're going to be ninth.
Nice.
we're back home. We're back home.
Yeah.
Oh, it's our original home ground.
Ninth. Yeah, yeah. It's great.
All is right in the world.
I'm really looking forward to that Storm Panthers game because that's not just a normal game. Like those two teams have kind of something that they're like proven against one another. So that'll be an interesting one. Yes. And you know, the game, it should be the game of the round, really.
Comfortably. Although, Tigers versus Dubai is going to be a bit of a cracker.
Yeah, well, any time you can, you know, watch the Tigers not play a football game, I'd recommend it.
Yeah, and look, you know, anytime they can run out against no one, it does make you feel a bit better about their failure to turn up against South in 1909. So, you know. I got the Balmain people offside at last.
Finally. Even though we all know you hate the Western Suburbs side. Oh.
Hate's a strong word.
Well, you just...
I'd probably go with don't properly appreciate them very thoroughly or something along those lines.
It's like the west side of the joint venture and daylight saving. Two things you
have to love. Tamworth.
Well, Tamworth, yeah.
But Tamworth, Canberra's roundabouts.
Tamworth is universal.
To those who are, they've got a functioning brain. What else has been going on?
That's it, really. It's all been really focused on the footy in Las Vegas this last week, which has been good. It's been good, and it was nice to see people really enjoying it. And then it was weird to see the aftermath of it, especially with people on Twitter. Like, a lot of people just lose their minds on Twitter these days. So you got every single sort of reaction, and it was just all extreme. So it'll be good to get the games really going again this weekend. I'm really looking forward to it. We can get back into normal footy talk. And yeah, you know, another premiership season starting. Can the Panthers make it 4 in a row?
That's going to be pretty nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
That's going to be pretty nuts.
I was thinking about that last night, how, like, I'm so super relaxed going into this year because, as I said last year, I feel like I finished the game. I won it. Like, everything else would just be a bonus. So
yeah, you're just deleting your saves and have another crack just for fun.
Yeah, yeah. Now it's just fucking around, really. Like, the idea of supporting a team that won 3 in a row is just outrageous. And to actually witness that happening from now on, it's like, well, I just kind of did that. So
actually, I've got a question.
Yeah.
Good question. When the Panthers won in, what was it, 2001?
The first one?
Second one.
The second one? Was that the second one?
First one was 1991.
Oh, you mean, I'm thinking of 2021. You mean 2003.
2003, sorry, yeah, that one.
Yeah.
When they won in 2003, how long could you sit there and go, well, we got that title in 2003. How long did you lean on that to get you through?
Oh.
How long was it until you started going, okay, I really want to see us back in a grand final again?
Honestly, I know, hand on heart when I say this, because 1991, I was too young. I didn't appreciate it, right? And it's weird. The space between 91 and 2003 feels like an absolute lifetime to me. And I never thought I would see the Panthers be a really good team. So when 2003 rolled around and I got to see every single game, and like, they started that season not great and then they just exploded and ran on a winning streak. That to me is the premiership that I was like, I've got this. I will always have this experience. I'm good for the rest of my life. And I mean that, right? I never got to a point where I was like, oh, I have to see them win again, because I'd done it. I'd seen them win it. I got pissed off when they didn't play well, or where they were mostly poorly run. I got pissed off about that, because I've always just said I just want them to be relevant and in the race, even if they don't win it. Just be in the finals. Give me a finals week one loss and I can be like, oh, well, at least we made it there. And we played someone, we gave it a shot. Because I think that at the minimum, that's where a team like Penrith should be with their junior base. So I wasn't the sort of person that was like, oh, I need another one. I honestly didn't feel that. So when we made the grand final in 2020 against the Storm, I was like, this is amazing. I can't believe it. They're so young. And we lost. I wasn't super completely devastated about it. And I think that obviously when we won against South, it was amazing seeing them win another premiership. When we beat the Parramatta Eels, it was special for a few different ways, because I think obviously beating Parramatta, they talked a lot, so that was nice. And also the way the game was, like, I mean, that was unbelievable, that first half of footy.
Oh, yeah, clinical.
And then winning last year, that was the most emotional I've probably ever been about a footy game, just for pure footy purposes, and you know that because I called you straight after it.
Yep.
Because that, honest to God, was really like the absolute pinnacle of anything I could have wanted out of the game of rugby league. Seeing my team have a dynasty, three in a row, in an era where teams don't win two in a row normally. So, yeah, like, I'm good for the rest of my life. I'll be honest, I'm good.
But you're actually good for three lifetimes then.
Yeah, really am. Like, if I didn't see the Panthers win another premiership from now on until the day I die, like probably 6 months from now, I'd be sweet. I'd be like, at least I've got the ones I got, you know? But what does it feel like for you as a West Tigers fan? Like, are you the same, or are you like, I need to see them win again? Fuck that shit.
It's a bit different for me, because I was never fully convinced that the West Tigers in 2005 were a premiership winning side.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of want to just see the team being competitive. So I want to see them in the finals every now and then, kind of like what Balmain were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you constantly in the finals and you're up there in the mix, then essentially a grand final is going to come your way at some stage. And they're a 50-50 thing by the time you get there.
Yeah.
So I kind of just wanted to see them being competitive. So when 2005 happened, it felt very flukish, because there was nothing in the preseason. Hell, there was nothing even at the midway part of the season that suggested they were going to be premiers.
Yeah.
It was just nothing. And just went on an absolute dream run through the finals. And even after they won the premiership, I was like, yeah, you know what? This is great and all. I didn't brag about it because I didn't feel like it was the actual premiership favorite team actually won the title.
Mm.
I don't know, that's not supposed to happen, but it just felt like that we weren't even in that bloody conversation.
It's just something that sort of just all of a sudden happened.
Just turned up out of nowhere. It'd be like, yeah, if the West Tigers won the premiership this year, you're like, where the fuck did that come from?
Yeah.
And so because it came from absolutely nowhere, there was no real build for it. And then the following year, they didn't even make the finals. You're like, well, that kind of proves that it was a fluke. And then they did make the finals in 2007 or 2008 or 2009. And you're just going, what the fuck? So it just kind of stood out as an anomaly. I never really hung my hat on it because they didn't back it up.
So I guess for the Panthers in 2003, like, they got the minor premiership. They, like, when you look at their finals run, it was a full-on finals run. And then they beat the Roosters in a really, really good grand final. And then the next year, they lost to the Bulldogs. And it was a really good game. They gave it a good shake, but they were missing a little bit of something. And you kind of knew that, and they just didn't have enough. And look, by the next year, it kind of was all over by 2005 for them. But it was enough of a, like, you couldn't point to anything with the Panthers in 2003 and say, yeah, but, because they ticked all the boxes kind of thing. So I think that helped me. So.
Yeah, so I haven't really been satisfied with anything that they've done, even though I probably was more satisfied with what they did in 2010, 2011.
Yeah.
Because I felt like they were building to something.
Yeah.
And there was consistency for a change. You're like, okay, fine, I've got a team that's doing something. And then they shit the bed.
Yeah.
And they've been stayed shitting in that same bed for years since. It's a pretty messy bed right now.
Can you think of another premiership in the modern era where it was kind of just like a team they sort of just won it and then disappeared. Like, I can't think of one that did it that quickly. Maybe the Bulldogs.
I'm thinking probably the first Storm title.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were a bit different, it feels like, though.
Yeah, well, they were very much a hodgepodge of a team. Everything was just sort of cobbled together out of a few other teams that got killed.
Lots of veterans in that side.
Yeah. And they won that title, and then they had some of their worst seasons. Not that they've had many of them, but they had some of their worst seasons in the few years after that before Bellamy turned up in, what was it, 2004, 3, something like that? I can't remember.
Pretty early.
Yeah. And it took him a year to get acquainted and set things up, and they've been in finals ever since.
Yeah.
So I think maybe that one. What's another one?
Yeah,
I tell you what, Cronulla in 2016, probably a little bit, although they have made the finals nearly every year since.
That's a good point, but they did have the circumstances.
Only in the other years around it.
Every single other year around it, yeah. Not that year.
Yeah, yeah. Just the stars aligned.
Just every year leading up to it, right? And then we had like March to September, and then every single year after that.
Yeah. Wow, yeah. They probably changed accountant somewhere along the way, and, you know, that's just how that happens. It's just unfortunate, but, you know, those 8 or 9 months?
Spotless.
Fucking perfect. Spot on. Everything was just checked all the boxes.
I made so much money betting on State of Origin Man of the Match during that era. I mean, it was just remarkable what a man can do.
Is it given?
Yeah.
An absolute given.
Even in efforts.
I can't really think of. Any others that might stand out. You probably have to go back to.
Yeah, I was thinking when you start pushing back through the years,
you got to go back a bit. Some of those Newtown ones, maybe, because I don't think Newtown ever went back to back.
Yeah.
Or a West one.
I can't think of one that stands out where they were just like boom and then just disappeared, though. Like, everyone's always normally there or thereabouts for two or three years, you know?
That's right. Even the team that loses in the grand final doesn't drop off as much as that West Tigers did in 2006 after winning the premiership.
I guess the only one you could really think about that in any sense is maybe like North Sydney in their 21-22, I think that's when they won them, 19-21-22.
Yeah.
And like that's a different sort of scale. Like if you say like, and then they never won another one again, that's insane.
I think though, there was a bit of a reason for that. Let me just quickly check to see if I'm right on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, come on now. It's not working. I believe what might have happened in 1923 is there was an incident with Duncan Thompson where a referee decided or figured that he'd kicked someone in the face and the judiciary suspended him for 2 games or 1 game, something like that. It wasn't much of a suspension, but the seasons were not that long then, so had an impact. And he was absolutely adamant that he did not do that. He'd never been before the judiciary in any time in his life. He was not a dirty player. And so he went there. He had documents of evidence from people who were at the game, even people from the opposition side who said, you know what, we're fairly certain that he didn't kick this person in the head. And the judiciary went, decision stands. Mm-hmm. And Duncan Thompson said, well, that's it, I'm not playing Sydney ever again. And he left immediately, went up to Toowoomba, created a dynasty up there. And so never came back.
He basically is the same catalyst for North Sydney as Tony Ray was for the London Broncos, except Tony Ray did it being at the Broncos.
Yeah, or you could probably put it as he had the same impact on North Sydney as the rain.
Oh, that's below the belt.
Harsh, yeah. But fair.
Yeah, that's true. That is fair. Completely fair.
So, yeah, the NRL or the New South Wales Rugby League judiciary kind of screwed the Bears there.
Yeah, they did. It's can you imagine what the judiciary charge sheet looked like back then?
Yeah, they were pretty, because there was no sin bin back then. So if you got sent off, you'd done something pretty nasty.
Yeah, yeah. Must have been full on.
Yeah. So, yeah, the charge sheets wouldn't have been long, but they would have been pretty clear cut.
Just being like accused of tearing someone's ear off.
You'd be like, okay, we've got a decision here that referees decided that you've spear tackled someone. And go, I didn't do it, Your Honour. All right, well, here's Exhibit A. And they just go out to the ground, and the player's there with his head still buried in the ground and he can't get out. They're like, how did he get there? He went, you know what, you got me. You got me.
Yeah, that must have been crazy.
But spear tackles were actually allowed back then, as were some high tackles.
Well, I can't ever remember reading about when they got rid of like coat hangers and stuff like that.
There was a huge, huge amount of cleaning up that happened in, what was it, 1980, yeah. 182, something like that. I think, was it Jim Cody was running the judiciary? And they just said, no, we're just going to start cracking down on all the punching, the fighting, the high tackles, all that stuff.
And they had to.
Oh, absolutely. God, it was rife.
Rotten, yeah.
I think Les Boyd copped a 20-week suspension for a punch on a player or something like that.
Dale Broman.
That's the one. Shattered his fucking jaw.
Yeah.
It's good to see it works again now, though. Yeah. But yeah, there was some pretty rough decisions that went on back then. They were very, very aggressive on it. I think it was about 4 or 5 players that copped those massive suspensions, but it worked. It really worked. They cleaned the game up really fast and started getting people to it really quickly and got big sponsors to it. You think 10 years after that crackdown, we had a full-blown State of Origin series, 3 more new teams from Brisbane, Newcastle, Gold Coast, a salary cap because we started going to full professionalism in that direction.
Yeah, we had teams.
We had Tina Turner. We could actually afford Tina Turner.
Yeah, yeah, that's
good. So much money came into the game through all of that, and that was off the back of that cleanup, and it only took, it was less than a decade to get that cleanup done.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it was necessary.
Yeah, it's...
There we go.
It's interesting to think, like, and there would have been people back then pushing against that too.
Absolutely.
Saying, oh, they're making the game soft and stuff like that. Back in the good old days, just take something off. That's how you tested, man.
Nothing wrong with a clip around the ear.
It's not about the actual score. It's about if you can leave the game and remember it.
Yeah.
And now they all go around and say how they've got fucking CTE.
Yeah. It's not about who wins the war. It's about who wins the battle.
Yeah.
Like that means something. It's the same fucking thing.
Yeah. You ever see the, there was a documentary that they did with Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier. And on Joe Frazier's answering machine, when he rang his answering machine, this is when he was an old man. This is only, I mean, it was probably about 10 years before he passed away. And he said, like, you saw the fight and we know that they stopped it, but you have a look at Muhammad Ali and look at me and tell me who won. And that's what his internet machine said. Fucking man.
Not bitter much.
Yeah. Well, it's like he was very upset with Muhammad Ali because Muhammad Ali said some things to Joe about Joe Frazier in the lead up to their fights that were really pretty unfair, you know, especially to Joe Frazier because, like, he called him all sorts of things. And Joe Frazier never forgave him for that. And I mean, like that last fight they had where Joe Frazier couldn't actually see the Muhammad Ali. He had one of his eyes he was blind in. and the other one was swollen over, and he was still ready to go out there and fight. And his corner was like, "No, you can't see. I'm not letting you go out there." And this was like in, I think it was round 14 or 13 or something. And that was the fight that Muhammad Ali said, like, he felt like he was dying at the end of it. Like, that was a, that was, man, that's incredible war. What a war. I love Joe Frazier. I've got actually got a boxing glove signed by Joe Frazier, hey.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice. I don't.
Don't you?
Nah.
Have you got any signed memorabilia?
I've got a regular yearbook that's signed by David Middleton.
Oh, nice.
I think I've got some signed stuff. There was a piece of paper 80 for a while that had Mal Meninga's signature on it. He just put on there, "Hi Andrew, change clubs."
That's fantastic. That's fantastic.
Well, this was a, yeah, not much. I don't tend to chase that sort of memorabilia stuff. I'm always chasing books and stuff.
I've got
a bunch of books with the author signature in it.
Yeah, that counts.
Yeah. That's about it.
I've got a footy signed by the, I think it was the 98 Kangaroos. And then I've got a big thing that I got for Christmas that's signed by Nathan Cleary, a big picture.
Nice.
Yeah, I've got a replica NBA championship trophy that's signed by Hakeem Olajuwon, Houston Rockets player.
That's nice.
Yeah, I got footy player signatures on cards and stuff. I got the one I always think about is Arthur Beetson. I got him to sign one of my rugby league grand finals book. I got that. Johnny Peard signed that as well.
Distant relative of mine.
Yeah, exactly. And then just random footy like cards that have. Oh, I've got Brandy Alexander's signature on like a little plaque thing, and that's all on my wall as well. I've got that here, so I've got a few signed things, but you got to be into that sort of thing to, you know, for it to be.
Yeah, no, it's just not something I've chased too much, to be honest.
Yeah, I get that. When I was a teenager, I used to, like, go to games, and then after games we'd wait for the players to come out the change rooms and we'd get signatures and shit.
I think that's probably what it is, because I lived where no other human did.
Yeah.
The chance of ever meeting them was pretty, I wouldn't say slim, yeah. It was nil.
Yeah.
And so you just went, well, there's no chance I'm ever going to get someone's autograph, so you never bothered to worry about it.
Yeah.
The Mal Meninga one was when I think my mum went into Wagga one day to get some grapes or something. He was doing a signing, might have been for a book signing or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And she got it then. She just took a page out of a little notepad that she had. So he writes something on here for my son. He goes for the Tigers, and that's what happened.
Ah.
But I was at school, so I wasn't there and got to see him when he did it.
Oh, that's fine.
But yeah, I did actually get to meet Mal Meninga many years later when I was working in Queensland. He came into the shop I was working in.
Yeah.
And got to see quite a lot of famous athletes through all of that. But I didn't make a deal because I thought they're probably sick of people making a deal about it. So I just go, hey, I just treat them like everybody else. They seem fine with that.
Yeah, that's how I treat it these days. Like if I see a footy player or something, I don't go over to them or anything. You just let them go on their way, you know.
Yeah.
I say that like I'm allowing them to live the rest of their lives. What the fuck? I allow them to pass.
Yeah. Next thing you know, they're going back and they'll be saying to their mates, "Do you know who I met today? I met League Freak. You wouldn't believe it. And you know what? He is 6'5".
Fucking handsome bastard too.
And you should see how tall he is.
Yeah, super tall. Maybe they don't realise that.
No, they don't.
But yeah, I know when I did all the commentary and stuff, because you see a lot of people in the back of the stadium, you know, just going in and out the commentary boxes. And I thought that was interesting. I saw Brett Camorley walk past Brett Camorley and people like that. But I never said nothing. So they probably all thought I was fucking ignorant.
Was it fun looking down at Brett Camorley?
I, you know what? The top of his head is fantastic. That sounds really dodgy when I say it.
Yeah. I wish we did little snippets because we could just have that. But it's a YouTube short. Hang on, what the hell are they talking about now?
That's their first YouTube short right there.
That'll be brilliant. Now, I want to point out, I was actually on another podcast during the week. I was on the...
Were you now?
Yeah. I just did a little bit of whoring. Not much. So I was on the whole KR pod, the Robin pod.
Yep. Red Robin podcast.
That's the one.
Yep.
Had a good little chat there about the podcast, the website, Super League, NRL, Vegas, all that sort of stuff. It was a good little chat. So yeah, if you're bored and you want to see my ugly face, you can go onto YouTube and check that out. I'd probably urge you to just put it on and then open up another browser window and just listen to it, because I might put you off your lunch.
I'm gonna watch the whole thing on YouTube and jerk to it.
That's exactly what I thought you'd do. That's why you still got my fan in the stand thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, at some point you can't give it back. It becomes part of your bedroom roof. So yeah. But yeah, I'm actually gonna have a listen to that probably on the weekend, hey. So be interested to see what you just talked about on there.
Yeah, we just talked about how amazing you are.
Oh no.
Basically it was about 45 minutes of just talking about you.
That's all anyone wants to hear on a podcast is themselves being talked about.
And I know this. Yeah. I know this, so that's what we did.
Okay.
And then we just said some other things just for the information for the clickbaity stuff.
Just to fill in the either side.
Yeah. Say Super League, and I went Super League. Okay, good. Say NRL Vegas, hashtag NRL Vegas. Oh, that's very good. Okay, got that one in there. What else is there? Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah. No, it was good. Very, very good.
That's good.
And we'll have to get him to come over onto our one.
Yeah.
And tell us about how great it is to be a Hulk AR fan, because I know that's something that you would, you and him would definitely agree on.
Yeah, like I always like to listen to Hull fans from the other side of the tracks. You know, so I mean, my first question would be, how do you get used to the smell?
it grows on you.
Yeah. I guess the next thing it would be like, tell me about tattoos and why they're so prevalent in Hull KR fans. Only the female fans, not the male fans. That is the second thing I'd ask about.
Nowadays, it doesn't seem like it's that rare thing for for fans. They seem to be everywhere nowadays. I feel like the outcast now because I don't have any.
Yeah, look, I've only got one. But, you know, not Mike Tyson inspired me to get that one.
Oh, yeah, well, that's right. Well, I think we've covered everything.
Yeah, it's been a good episode, Andrew.
We've had a yak.
Yeah, do you reckon that next time you could get your fucking computer to work?
No chance.
Nah.
No chance.
So you got that's why I told you. I buy them off the shelf because then they just work. You press the button, they work. My days of playing with computers.
I've got my people. It's okay.
Get your people, Sean, to fix the frigging computer for him.
It's fine. When it's working, it's perfect.
You were saying to me before we started recording, you were like, I carry the website and the least computer that works.
I don't have balls that big. Oh, man. At the moment, we're doing some work on the on the website, and me being the person who we kind of, it's just kind of this unwritten thing, I'm like, I'm the research and historian guy, and Sean's been doing a whole heap of it because I've just been not online that much.
Yep.
I'm going, hang on, he's now doing my job. What do I do? I know, I'll do the social media stuff. I'm looking and go, yeah, I don't want to.
It's like, all of a sudden, fuck, is he realizing he can cut out the middleman here?
I'm going to be out of a job here. I have to start pulling my finger out and do some work. But, that's out there. We might try and get some more UK people involved and try and get myself on a few more UK podcasts and see if we can get them to interview you.
They don't like you, mate. They don't like what I've got to say to them, most of them.
Anyway. It'll be fun just to hear them ganging up on you.
They can try. This isn't so a fucking soccer game.
Soccer.
Exactly.
Just call it soccer.
It's soccer.
That's right. That's all it will ever be.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap this thing up and put a bow on it.
You know when people stop playing soccer? When they turn 6 and they realize you can play other sports that are more complicated.
Proper sports.
Yeah.
Yeah. Real sports.
Exactly.
Unless they're in Victoria, then they play that weird one where they think that wearing headgear still stops you from getting concussions.
I saw somebody, it's one of my followers on Twitter, and he was calling them Sharon Fisters.
That's harsh.
I know, but I thought I'm definitely using that from now on.
There's an article that came out today or yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about how the AFL is going to try and make sure that every single child that's playing AFL will have to wear headgear, or they call them helmets.
Yeah, they call them helmets. It's so stupid.
In an effort to try and reduce, brain injuries and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I gave him a bit of advice.
Mm-hmm.
I made a tweet saying, you know what else helps reduce concussions as much as headgear?
Mm.
Painting your toenails. And scientifically, if you paint your toenails the same colors as your team, it actually has the effect of reducing concussions by a further 84%.
There you go.
So I'm doing all I can to help out rival sports.
Is there a sport anywhere on planet Earth that is more fucking ludicrously off its own chops than AFL? Like, they really just believe their own bullshit so often. It's crazy.
Probably soccer.
Well, say that to soccer people, Andrew. That's pretty rough.
Oh, well, I've already turned my back on my people and had to go a Balmain fan, so, you know, everyone's open slather now.
You're just burning bridges, eh?
I'm like Luke Brooks Unleashed now.
I had some idiot today on Twitter saying, like, it's the thing of, like, I hate this person, but, you know, they're saying the right thing here. It's just like, block. Now you got a reason to hate me properly. You may have talked about this, how there are people I don't know exist and they think they've got this something with me. Like, it's so fucking weird, hey?
Well, that's the thing about social media. If some people have an argument with you and they either lose or they're not satisfied with the outcome, then that's a grudge that they take to their grave.
Yeah.
And I just go, it's words, like, whatever.
It's so fucking strange. I don't understand it whatsoever. But you and me have talked about it, where people have said stuff to you, and I'm like, I don't even know who the fuck that person is. And I don't understand it. It's so weird.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I think, too, because on social media, a lot of people can just hide behind some alias name. They feel a bit tougher to say whatever they want.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it is. You know what that's like.
I hate people like that, eh?
Oh, you knock them up and I'm just knocking them down. Boom. Nah, look, it's fucking social media is crazy.
I've noticed Twitter is a fucking, like, a hornet's nest of shit. It's really
I've found myself doing less and less posting anywhere on social media these days, and not feeling the worst for it either, which is probably not a bad thing.
Yeah, me too. I do a lot of, on Twitter, I will post something and then just leave it. I can't go back to it. Sometimes I will reply to people on there, but yeah, otherwise you get like it, because it doesn't matter what you say anymore. It's everyone's like, there's always someone that's got a reason to be fucking angry at you, because you're like a certain type of Tim Tam that they don't like or something, or you like butter over margarine and shit like that. And it's like, geez.
Yeah, it's either horribly lame or horribly toxic. It's weird.
Yeah. Lots of videos of people doing fake stuff to get attention too.
Yeah, that's always great.
Yeah, if you notice that. That's why I stick to the industrial accidents and the other videos.
CCTV.
Yeah.
Watching people either dying or going close to dying.
Watching you know what? I like watching a good elevator fucking problem. That's always fun.
There was one the other day who came out of an old woman who was leaning against a shop window and had the shutter down. The shopkeepers put the shutter up and it's caught in the back of her pants and lifted all the way up.
Poor lady was lifted all the way up, yeah.
She just hang there. She went, oh, I better make sure I grab hold of my bag. So she reaches down and grabs that while she's hanging up.
That's when you know it's just not your day.
Yeah, well, she knew that straight away. She's going, okay, my day's fucked. I'm just going to hang here until he lets me down.
And he did. He let her down. She was all right. But, yeah, I would have just gone home. I would have been like, that's the universe giving me a sign. I have to go home.
Pack it in.
Yeah.
Sleep the day off and come back tomorrow. Have another crack. All right. Well, look, we'll wrap this baby up. Thanks for tuning, everyone. Make sure you check us out on YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, all those things. One day I'll get around to repeating what they all are, but I've said them that many times, you probably know what they are. And we'll catch us all next time.